Hi, good evening, everyone, and welcome to the San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District Zone 3 Advisory Committee. The date today is Thursday, July 20th, 2006. I'd like to ask Dean for a roll call, please.
Is that good now? Okay. Mr. Dahl?
Here.
Chairman Rabinow?
Here.
Mr. Versaw?
Here.
Mr. Costello is absent. Mr. Gehring?
Here.
Mr. Wallace is not here. Mr. Reynolds?
Here.
We do have a quorum, Mr. Rabinow.
Good. Thank you very much. At this time, I'd like to open the meeting to public comment. If there's anybody from the audience that would like to speak, please come forward to any item that is not on the agenda. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the advisory board. Thank you all again for your attendance. I don't know who to thank, but we've just completed a tour of our new water treatment plant here near Lopez Lake. And it was very interesting and very insightful. I don't know who put together the barbecue for us, but I want to take an opportunity to thank them very much. It was very well done and good. Okay, hearing no more corrections or additions or deletions, I'll entertain a motion to accept the minutes of May 18, 2006 with the aforementioned changes made.
So moved, Mr. Chairman.
Second.
I have a motion and a second on the floor. Is there any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. And the next is the election of advisory committee chairman and vice chairman. At the last meeting on May 18th, there were two motions made. One, what page is that on? Does anybody?
Mr. Chairman, if I might, at the last meeting, the nominations were made for Bill Rabinow as chairman and Jim Gehring as vice chair. And those were the only nominations that were made at the time.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Versaw. And what's the appropriate action on this now, Dean? Do I need to ask for nominations again from the floor?
No, we just take a vote.
Okay. Who were the two again?
For chairman, Bill Rabinow. And for vice chair, Jim Gehring.
Right, exactly. Okay, do we need to do them individually or collectively?
I think you can probably do them collectively, if you will.
Okay, I would then like to have a vote for Bill Rabinault as chairman of the Zone 3 Advisory Board. And I've got Gehring in my mind because he's one of our planning commissioners.
How about if I put it in the form of a motion? I'd like to move that the advisory committee elect Bill Rabinow for chairman for the coming year and Jim Gehring as vice chair for the coming year.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion carries unanimously. I appreciate your confidence, as well as I'm certain Mr. Gehring does as well. Is Don Mellon here?
I did call Don and left a couple of messages. Last couple of weeks, I haven't heard from him, so I will try to find him physically and find out what's going on for the next meeting.
Okay, very good. I think that these recreation status reports are very interesting, number one, but I think it's very important for the public to be able to hear those as well. There is no other representative here to provide a recreation report. Okay, we'll move on to the next agenda item, which is the operations report. Dean Benedicts, please.
I asked Ron Coleman to give us a brief operation report today because it's very convenient to have Ron here. Ron, I think you probably need to come up to the microphone. I think you can raise it.
Take a chair with you.
Okay. I got it.
Hello, Mom.
Okay, the operational report for water treatment plant here. Okay, Lopez Lake, elevation 516.16 as of this morning. That makes storage of 43685 acre feet. For treatment plant production is 4.25 MGD, million gallons a day. State water about a million gallons a day. The filter performance of the plant here is doing good. Four filters in service. Lengthy runs, about 72-hour filter runs, and run turbidities 0.05, less than 0.1. And that's basically it. Okay?
All right. Let me ask the board if there are any questions of Ron. I have one,
sure.
And I think it's going to be an obvious question to the public, and do remember one of the things that we need to watch at these meetings is MGD means million gallons per day, but the public is not familiar with these acronyms, so we're trying our best to train ourselves to speak in a language they can understand. You say that we're treating about 4 million gallons a day.
Yes.
Is that what you said?
Through the treatment plant.
Through the treatment plant.
4 million gallons a day through the treatment plant.
But yet we're releasing 4 million gallons a day.
That's two separate operations. Right. The releases are downstream for the creek. Treatment plant is coming down from the dam to the terminal reservoir here to be treated to the plant.
Okay.
Two separate operations.
Right. Are there any other questions, concerns?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Basically, Ron, you're 4 feet from spill.
Actually, we're 522. We're about 6 feet from spill.
I thought the crest was 520.
It's 522 due to the next, the latest bathymetric study was, they made some changes to it. March 2002.
Okay, Ron, thank you very much for that report. I appreciate it. Let's move on to old business. Dean, would you like to tell us about our nice new nameplates?
Yes, after several months of back and forth, we did get the new nameplates. They're here. I'll be bringing these to all the meetings, and hopefully they're working well on the video. That was the point of getting them, so we could know who everybody was and see clearly. So we're done with that.
There you go. That helps very much. Okay, let's move on to the Lopez Water Treatment Upgrade Tracking, and that would be Straith from Public Works. Good evening, and welcome to the meeting. Uh-oh.
This is going to work. I'm not as tall as Ron.
Help. Why don't you just give them to me, and I'll hand them down so you can just go on up there.
Good evening, Advisory Committee members. For the record, my name is Straith Smithson, R2, with County Public Works. The report that I distributed is for information only, but if you have any questions, please do ask, because this is more of an informational report than a presentation. But in the meantime, I do have one other item to discuss, and it's revisiting the item from the previous TAC and Finance Committee meeting, Advisory Committee meeting that we had last month, where Public Works had proposed a possible Advisory Committee as well as the Advisory Committee meeting, Advisory Committees, first for their endorsement, as well as confer with the County Auditor's Office. Jerry Seebach is the County Auditor Controller as well as the County Debt Advisory Committee, and the president of the San Luis Obispo County Financing Authority Board of Directors. He raised the following concerns about the refinancing of the bonds for the reasons that are in your agenda item. And I'm not sure what page that is on in the packet.
Page 2, item B3.
Pardon me?
Page 2, item B3.
Okay. So if you would turn to that page and
right after
you could follow along. Okay.
Got it.
Okay. His concerns were fourfold.
Those are the old minutes.
For the most part. Oh, I'm sorry. Is everyone on the page?
Yeah. I wonder, Dean, if it might be possible, as you put down items 1, 2, 3, and da-da-da, whether maybe we could just put a starting page associated with that or something.
I will.
Okay. Well, I don't think it's here. Is it?
I saw it in here. It's got to be here.
Okay. Whereabouts is it? Because it doesn't even have a page number on it.
Oh, right there.
There it is. It's right before the right, fold-out.
Subject review of Lopez bond funding options. Page before the fold-out.
Yep.
Okay. The first of the concerns was that it would be too much borrowing for too little benefit. The proposal would require issuing about $24 million of new debt to obtain savings of about $735,000 of new spendable project cash. Mr. Seebach felt that the savings benefit did not outweigh the cost and time involved in refinancing these bonds, which was similar to what several of you had expressed as well. Secondly, he felt it was too soon. This is a very new, unseasoned series of bonds to be refunding. Mr. Seebach did not favor having the market think that we would flip back and forth willy-nilly, but preferred to think that we would only want to borrow for good and justifiable purposes with strong sources of repayment. Frequent refinancing can affect bond ratings, which could be considered similar to an individual taking out too many credit cards or applying for too many credit cards. Thirdly, key staff shortage. The Board of Supervisors tentatively agreed on June 20th to take back the sewer, or get back in the sewer business for Los Osos. This possibly involves borrowing $150 million and will require additional staff time from various county departments. And lastly, he had a concern of it being a weak market. The fixed income market right now is delicate, and this proposal makes sense only if interest rates do not jump up. There is a fair risk that we could start working.
What's going to be the cost of refinancing? What was the bond company going to get out of it?
I don't have that information with me. It was in the last packet, and I will get that information for you because they did give us. I'd need to get back to you on that, but yes, I think you're correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any questions for Straith on either the information report submitted titled Lopez Water Treatment Plant Upgrade Budget Tracking or the recommendation that we not pursue refinancing? Hearing none, Straith, I thank you very much for your time this evening.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay, let's move on now to plant upgrade status. Dean?
Yes, thank you. In your packet, the fold-out gives you a visual picture, although fortunately we were able to meet here this evening, and you've got an update certainly of where we are in the construction. Construction is going very well. We had a couple of pretty significant meetings this last week with Cushman and the Paul Corporation. They were out last week from New York and brought one of their technicians and their project managers. We went through the equipment that's going to be basically going in this building, the membrane equipment. We had a lot of good discussions. They were working with Cushman directly to show them where things are going to be and where the parts were and what was missing and what was there. And we went over quite a few things. We had, a real good week last week interacting with the contractor and our consultants and the subcontractors. We also had a meeting regarding the split flow, which is utilization of the membrane system at the same time we utilize our existing filtration plant. And we'll be probably bringing to you some recommendations about some modifications to that to let the contractor get going maybe a little bit quicker, installing the pretreatment equipment in one of the filtration trains, and while he's still working in here before we set the membranes up. So We'll be talking to the TAC about that. And contractors doing a good job. I think you can see out here things are neat and clean and safe, and we appreciate Lee Cushman, his here in the audience today, has provided availability to us to use this for the meeting tonight. As far as the contract goes, on your schedule, as July 06, you'll see that the schedule summary shows a percent time elapsed at 42%. Cost summary shows the amount expended of 39.6%. We do have a 30-day change order, a 30-day time extension that will be granted to Cushman, which was something that was in the original contract as an addendum that we all sort of missed until someone found it a month or so ago, and we will be incorporating that into Cushman's contract as it was an addendum and is part of his time. So basically what that will do, it will make the time and the cost expended almost just right on about 40%. So we're on schedule with that summary.
Good. Thank you very much. Any questions of Dean regarding the plant upgrade status?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Versa.
I might just take a moment. I'd just like to make a couple comments. First of all, I'd like to thank the county staff, Dean and Ron in particular, and the MWH staff that were here this afternoon for the tour. For me, it was very instructive, and I think it was as well for the rest of the committee, and I really appreciate the time that everybody took to give us that tour. And I'd like to repeat a comment that I made a little earlier about the condition of the existing treatment plant after 30-some years of operation. It's amazing to me what good condition it's in, which I think speaks well to what a good job the county and county staff have been doing in taking care of this facility that we're now replacing. And to me, that looks good for us in the future when that we're spending a lot of money to get a state-of-the-art plant now. And I think we'd all like to think that it's being operated and maintained correctly. And now I have a very high confidence that that's what we can expect. So thanks to everybody, and thanks for the way that this facility looks.
Good job, Larry. That's wonderful. This has always been county run, right? It was never contracted out for any reason, or
as far as I know, it was always been.
Yeah, you see, that does speak well. I know in Pismo Beach, with our sewer plant, as an example, in the I think it was the early '80s, we got out of the sewer business and we hired contractors to come in and run it for us, and that was the crowning blow, if you will, for the maintenance on that, because it was a profit-making organization. And as Larry so rightly put it, the quality and caliber of our staff people that we have within the county are just absolutely second to none. And the main reason for that, in my humble opinion anyway, is that they care. They care. So thanks. Good report. Can we move on to the HCP Hutchins? I mean, the HCP implementation plan.
Fine. Get this over here where I can be heard. Mr. Chairman, members of your committee, I'm Mark Hutchinson with the Department of Public Works. What I have this evening for you is consideration of the interim downstream release schedule. You have a copy of this in your packet. And I have about 10 extra copies if anybody in the public wants to follow along. Anybody wants to get a copy of this? Doesn't look like it. I think these are only $5 a piece. I didn't do color. We're calling this the interim downstream release schedule. We have been to your technical advisory committee on two occasions with this version of the plan, and we're seeking advisory committee review and your recommendations on actions that we would be taking prior to approval and implementation of the Habitat Conservation Plan. The purpose, as I have up on the screen, is to come up with a plan for managing the downstream releases from the dam prior to having the HCP approved, which within it has a fairly complex downstream release schedule
based on several factors, including reservoir level, weather conditions, and historic annual rainfall amounts. The development of this plan stems from concerns that our current downstream releases could be jeopardizing municipal and agricultural water supplies. We'll see later on in the presentation that there's no evidence of that, but again, we are in a fairly 5,851 gallons per acre foot or 43,560 cubic feet of water. Downstream releases total 4,400 acre feet annually. That's the 2005 total, and we're on track to be very close to that number again this year. So we have a total demand on the reservoir of 8,934 acre feet annually. The current safe yield is calculated at 8,730 acre feet, which puts us in a 204 acre foot deficit. At the advisory committee, we discussed briefly the fact that a 204 acre foot difference, when you're considering demand versus safe yield, needs to be taken in context with the fact that we calculate safe yield very conservatively. So that's one element that we're recommending that your advisory committee keep in the back of your mind as we continue with the presentation and ask for recommendation and discussions. The objectives of this downstream release schedule clearly are to meet contractual responsibilities in the long term, to have no discernible impacts to steelhead, which we know would put us at risk of violating the Endangered Species Act and also perhaps risk our investment in the HCP. We need to continue to meet agricultural needs, and we would hope to generate data pertinent to the HCP, both its processing and eventual implementation. We view these four bullets as the first three being the highest priority and the fourth bullet being probably equally as high. That's how I tell this is one of my projects. Everything's priority one, and there are no other priorities. Our approach has evolved since we first started talking with the Technical Advisory Committee and your committee about developing some sort of an interim release schedule. We initially focused on what the HCP defines as a no-impact scenario, which in brief describes a situation where we would reduce releases in the early spring and the late fall. Our current release is 4 million gallons a day, which is approximately 6 cubic feet per second. And under that HCP scenario, we would be dropping down in the range of 3 cubic feet per second. And calculations show that that would generate in the range of 500 acre feet of year additional storage. The problem is that because, especially in the fall but also late spring, there are a lot of demands on the aquifer and the stream below the dam, and a lot of the analysis done for the HCP, although it shows that may be possible, also shows that recovering from a dry stream situation takes sometimes a number of days. That would then increase our risk relative to impacting steelhead and all of the things that go along with that. So what we did was we took another look and talked about what about releasing or reducing releases during the wet season. We get a lot of comments when there's a rainstorm and members of your committee and the community drive up the road, it's pouring down rain and the pipe is flowing 6 cubic feet per second, 4 million gallons a day. So that's the approach we took in this, is to try to, reduce the releases, begin to come into the picture. We have stream gauges at Sacchetti Road and Arroyo Grande. I'll show you a map shortly. And we would propose in this to add new stream gauges at Rodriguez Bridge, which is the first road crossing before the dam, or below the dam, and also at 22nd Street, which is the last in Oceano, which is the last road crossing before the creek discharges into the ocean. The plan also includes upgrading the existing gauges so that they would be outfitted with essentially remote read technology. It's a fairly straightforward process to add equipment to those gauges so we could read, not necessarily in real time, but every half hour the gauge would report on what the discharge rate is at that point. And commonly that's done through the Internet. It's available to the public. If you get on the internet, there are several water systems around the nation that you can see what the current discharge rate is. Not that they're being all that careful to notify the public. I think it's just the cheapest way to do it. We also would, at least in the first couple years of implementing this plan, establish some visual monitoring points, places where we have easy access and current legal access to the stream. We'd put staff gauges in the pools and record the levels and then try to correlate those with what we're doing as far as release schedules. And hopefully, as we learn, if we're able to learn how the stream responds to various release changes, we could reduce the number of visual points and thereby reduce the amount of time that half the staff has to spend out in the field. They're listed up there primarily on Rio Grande Creek, but we have some convenient locations on the circuit on some key tributaries, primarily Tar Springs Creek and Los Barros Creek. I put 22nd Street on there. If you look in the plan, you'll see that we're not proposing to put a stream cage there in the first year. We spread the capital cost out, although it's fairly minor, over at least 3 years. And again, that keys with our intent to carefully implement this program, again, to avoid impacts. Don't know. This map is probably not in your plan, and it doesn't look like it's going to show up very good. Different PowerPoint programs, but Lopez Dam in the upper right, the stream down south of Rio Grande, and discharging. The two blue dots are existing gauges, be a new gauge at 22nd Street and a new gauge at Rodriguez Bridge. And then the PowerPoint slide, when I show it on my computer, has a lot more squares and labels and things all over it that aren't going to show up on this one. This table is on page 6 of your plan, if you want to look at the paper one. This essentially illustrates the feasibility of saving water, increasing storage by reducing release rates. Essentially what we've done, I'm going to get the arrow up here, on the first column labeled current, that's our existing releases, 6 cubic feet per second. There's an acre foot per day number, a 90-day total, and then the total added storage based on releases that we might have. So that's the current thing. That's what we're doing there. We jumped over to the ninth risk associated with this. So one of the assumptions we have to keep in mind is that 90-day number. But if we reduce to 4.86 CFS for 90 days, which is only a 19% reduction, that generates 204 acre-feet of additional storage in the dam. The other numbers across the top are generated just for flat numbers. What is it, 5 CFS, 4, 3, and 1? And then the 3.2 is put in there just to generate a 500 at the bottom, which is carried through the report. That would get our 204 plus potentially some surplus water. And it's close to a 50% reduction, which happens to be the HCP bottom number for spring and fall. So there may be some potential for achieving that number in the wet season while it's raining. Costs. This, again, is out of your report. It's Table 7 on page 15, and it's a summation of Exhibit 4 on page 21 at the back. And we essentially we took the capital costs of putting in additional stream gauges and automating the ones that we have and spread them out in year one and year two. So year one is one new gauge, automating two existing one. Year two is installing a third gauge with automation at a fairly difficult location. And year three, the $1,000 under monitoring effort capital is to do a remote read on the actual discharge rate. It currently reads here at the water plant. Not sure we need to know that because it's controlled by the operators and there'd be close communication. They're still going to be operating the dam, even though I might be able to see the numbers. That's an important point. We're not proposing that somebody outside of the system gain the authority or ability to manipulate the release valve. Then there's two lines for operational. That's the staff time invested in reading the data, going out and looking at the visual monitoring points, and trying to analyze the results that we're getting to see if we can make sense of what's happening. And then when you spread that out over a storage range, again, somewhere between 100 and 500 acre feet, we end up with costs that are reported there in the bottom, long-term costs of 72 to 410 acre feet. Year three shows at the top a passage barrier removal investment of up to $25,000 a year. We would focus, assuming again that years one and two generate useful storage and a level of confidence that we can continue to do this, then there's an opportunity to perhaps save additional water if we can remove some of the passage barriers. The link there is simply that if it takes more water for the fish to get by, if we remove the barrier, then less water the fish can still get by, so we reduce less water into the creek, and there's still not an impact on the fish. $25,000 is a number that is a big round number. I don't know that we could spend that much given the amount of work that needs to go into permits and whatnot, plus dealing with landowners and conservation organizations, but we put it in there as a high limit to see what this might cost us in the long term. And then this table, or this graph, just illustrates some comparison numbers. The current number is the horizontal blue line. Oh, by the way, this starts at October. I'm not sure that's the water year we're using, CP high release scenario. And what's happening there is the way the HEP is currently written, if we have greater than 30,000 acre feet of storage on May 1st, then the following winter, we would add flows on top of rain events to create what's called attraction flows. That shoots a lot of water out over the beach and helps the steelhead find the entrance to the creek and enhances the spawning that goes on. Then you've got the purple line, if that's what you want to call it, pink line, and I'm getting my arrow back, and that's what the IDRS, this interim downstream release schedule, is proposing, that since we don't have a permit requirement to do attraction flows, we would instead create this dip on the theory that natural rainfall and inflow from tributaries and inflow from the adjacent streamside aquifer would make up the flows, and we could then save an amount of water. So the area between these curves illustrates the volume of water that would be saved. This particular one goes down to 3 CFS, so that's what 500 acre feet on a graph looks like. Depending on the timing of the rainfall, the curve would move to the right or to the left. Depending on the amount of rainfall, the bottom would go up, probably not down. And that's what we would, after we operate for a year, we would see what this really looks like. This really is the best case event, I think, is what's shown there. So that really illustrates what the IDR, what's going on. Another component advanced by several members of the TAC is something we're calling the Low Reservoir Response Plan. And the issue there is, given climate changes, other things that we can predict in the future, the question was asked, and I'll paraphrase it, shouldn't we have some kind of plan already put together for what we're going to do if the reservoir starts to get critically low? Shouldn't we plan in advance for that kind of a situation? This, by the way, is detailed in Section 5 of your plan. And the question comes from this. This is a graph of actual reservoir levels. This is generated by the data that Ron Coleman and his crew keeps. So they measure the reservoir. The graph shows reservoir level from when the dam was constructed in 1969 on the left up to about the middle of 2005, just past January 2005. This, by the way, is generated by the consultant. And I do have to point out there's a little bit of a translation problem between his program and our program. That's why it shows the storage capacity at above 50,000 acre feet, which it isn't.
Right.
So we have to mentally move the graph down a little bit, but the bottom numbers here are accurate. So the question about critically low reservoirs comes from this part of the curve right here. 1987 to 1992, we're down at 16,500 acre feet in a reservoir that has demands of 8,000 acre feet a year and a minimum pool of 4,000 acre feet. So there was a little over a year in storage, not counting evaporation and whatnot, at that point. So to do a little bit of simple modeling, and we manipulated these two columns, municipal deliveries and downstream releases, and plugged in what we're currently doing. That, by the way, would generate a slightly different evaporation number because the reservoir levels are higher, so these in reality would be a little bit higher because there's more exposure, but people smarter than me tell me that it's not a significant amount for this level of analysis. That generates new storage, change in storage numbers and new total storage. And as we see, the total storage is considerably higher than what it was in real time. So instead of that number being, 17.5, it would have been 23.7, roughly. So the first question we get to at that point, someone might ask, okay, so if we plug in our real numbers into the worst case scenario, it doesn't go below 20,000, maybe we don't need a plan. Nobody on the TAC said that, by the way.
I don't think so.
But anticipating somebody might not say that, I went ahead and took another step and said, all right, let's do some more work with the same data. Let's create our own worst-case scenario. Let's just reset the reservoir at 20,000 acre-feet. Don't know what's been going on in the climate to drive it down. And then let's take numbers from the worst inflow year on record, the worst inflow and the worst rainfall, which was, I believe, 1992, and say that we repeated that year on into the future. And what this really illustrates to us is that if we started at 20,000 acre feet, continued our downstream release and municipal deliveries, we're 2.5 years to minimum pool. Again, knowing that we probably wouldn't get to 20,000 acre feet and that the records show that we've never repeated a year that bad. It's gotten better the year after. But again, for illustration purposes, this way we can take the same graph and then manipulate the municipal and release numbers and to pick numbers out of the air. If we cut the downstream by 500 acre feet and cut municipal by 10% across the board, we look in the right column, we went from 2.5 years to minimum pool to just over 3 years to minimum pool. The TAC looked at these numbers and I think we were in agreement that they liked the methodology. That's the kind of thing that we would do if there were a low reservoir situation. We also already have this key decision graph or this key decision flow chart that's been around for some time where we would ask ourselves the question, 20,000 acre feet or less, if there is, we continue what we're doing. If there's not, then there's a series of actions that both the flood control district, the advisory committee, and the zone 3 agencies take to define a new downstream release schedule for that summer and following. And the point being, we would use the same methodology that we just saw in the previous three slides to help determine that. So then the question to the TAC was, do we need to go to the next step and actually start generating numbers, or have we established enough of a methodology based on the low probability of being in this situation that we don't need to spend more time and money? The sense I got was, this is good. These things, the monitoring and the slow closing of the valve, which is detailed in your report, we need to have our gauges in place when it starts raining, which we estimate to be January by the time it's rained enough to saturate the surrounding area. And we're still, although we're behind schedule, we still actually have time to do that. I'm told that installing stream gauges would not be a significant task. The folks in our utilities division have identified equipment that can be attached to a bridge and use, I don't know if it's infrared light or lasers or something. The point being, we don't need to get regulatory permits to get down in the stream and put gauges in, so we can act relatively fast. The one thing that you might see jumping out down here is this thing right in the middle that says Zone 3 agencies approve contract amendments. What in the world is that about? That stems from a concern from senior county staff about whether we are or are not increasing the level of risk that we currently incur in operating a reservoir, primarily risk from enforcement action from a resource agency or another. And their thought was one way to address that might be to put something in the contract between the flood control district and the Zone 3 agencies that tied us closer together, I should say. There was some thought when we first heard about this that the question was, are we asking other agencies to indemnify us if we do something illegal? Which, by the way, you can't write a contract to do that. And that really wasn't the question. It turns out that the concern was, well, if we do something that turns out to be a violation, bad enough that we get a fine from whoever, but are we out there so far that the Zone 3 agencies would say, you guys are crazy, we're not going to bear the cost through our ratepayers, we're going to sue you as well. The TAC felt like their review of the situation was is that with the monitoring and with the conservative approach to operations that we've defined, they didn't believe that the level of risk exceeded the risk that we incur in operating a reservoir to begin with. I've carried that message back to senior management and had some conversation about what this plan actually proposes and the careful way that we're proposing to approach it, especially in the first year. And also expressed the tax concern that opening up those contracts is a Pandora's box potentially anytime you do that. So I think what I have for management is, well, maybe we don't need to do any contract amendments. Maybe we don't need new side agreements. They want to evaluate the situation further and perhaps ask the agencies, the Zone 3 agencies themselves, at the next HCP update to tell us whether they endorse or don't endorse this approach, which is a lot softer situation, I think, assuming that the advisory committee even endorses it. I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit. So I think that's a better way to go. The question is, do we need to wait for that before we put stream gauges in place and get ready to do this, because that affects our timing? And my management's belief is that we really, even though the stream flow might drop somewhat, we just wouldn't expect that anybody would irrigate enough to be affected by our operations, and vice versa. We looked at some of the testing that was done in the dry season. One of the problems is that you reduce the flow in the summer and a farmer needs water, he starts pumping water, the stream drops, and it takes too long to catch the stream back up. So we would want to be manipulating the stream when we don't have the risk of a large agricultural well having to be run for 24 or 48 hours, and then we're competing for that same flow. So the summertime releases would not change under this, and we essentially are focusing on, what's the correct word, skimming off a little of the water that would otherwise flow to the ocean is what we're looking for.
Correct, absolutely. That is a good word.
The top of that a little mm-hmm. bit, going across the beach. Mm-hmm. So I put together another one of those decision things. We're asking for, again, discussions and questions and recommendations, and then whether or not, if you are ready to make decisions, should we continue with implementing this IDRS and starting to purchase stream gauges, or do we really need to save 204 acre feet? Amending contracts, that's been modified to perhaps agency endorsements. The low reservoir response plan, have we taken that far enough at this point in the reservoir situation? And then the middle one, apportioned costs, I did want to touch on that. The TAC believes that, or their recommendation was, that our existing contracts address that question. Basically, the first 204 acre feet to get us up to matching Shafe Yield would be a cost that's just across the board. Water above that would go into the surplus pool, and that's already handled in the contracts as to how that's paid for. And they know a lot more about how that works than I do, and they didn't seem to see that there's any issues with apportioning costs, given the numbers that we're looking at in the report. So with that, I'm available for questions and recommendations.
Well, you know, I guess that my biggest goal, if you will, out of this whole thing is that yeah, I'd like to have the 204 feet brought acre feet brought back up to match the safe yield. That makes sense. But my goal is I'm very, very concerned about Arroyo and Grover, and my goal would be to generate surplus water that they could have. Now, knowing that would not be a sustainable amount forever and ever and ever. But, you know, I still honestly believe that California does not have a water problem. California and the Central Coast has a storage problem. And that's what it all boils down to. And if there were a way for Grover and Arroyo to take and store and add to that storage, it would be wonderful, but there isn't. So, I don't know. Anybody have any questions or comments for Mr. Hutchinson?
Yes. You're saying how many feet per second is going out as a release now?
Not sure I'm following exactly.
Okay. You say it's six cubic feet per second. Okay, so you got 6 cubic feet per second flowing from the dam until the first tributary starts dumping more water in. Okay. So if we reduce that in order to save water, then we're going to have less than 6 cubic feet per second flowing, even in the rainy season, between the dam and where the first tributary puts water in. Is that a problem with the regulatory agencies that's requiring this 6 feet per second to go down the creek?
A couple of things related to that. The current 6 cubic feet per second is, how should I say it? That's the proposal that the district made to the agencies to essentially fend off any enforcement action. There's no formal approval or informal approval from those agencies, because the only thing they can approve is an HCP, and they've learned over the years to not make informal site agreements. And the 6 CFS was generated several summers ago based on summertime flow. So the 6 CFS seems to be working for everyone at this point in time. We bump it up in the summer, so it works for the agriculturalists. We're putting sufficient water in June and July to keep the streamside aquifers up to where they need them. But your comment about the first tributary is important. The district did, I believe it's about 1989, something called a permeability study. And it specifically looked at the area of the creek from the dam down to what was called the Tally Bridge at the time, which is just below Biddle Park. That study was commissioned because of observations the operators made that in the days when they shut the flow way down or even shut it off, stream would stop flowing in the upper part. And then when they started releasing, your expectation was that the water would start flowing at the dam and go all the way down, when in fact it went shortly below the dam, went underground, and then resurfaced at the Tally Bridge, and flow actually started surfacing, backing up the stream. So the consultant in that looked at the groundwater basin adjacent to and under the stream in that reach. And it turns out that's for maintaining flow, that's the critical section because of that geology. We don't have any tributaries flowing in there. So the idea of doing this in the winter season is that we need what I'm calling the streamside aquifers, or the alluvium that's laying on both sides of that valley, to be saturated and flowing into the stream to help keep our surface flow going so that we can release below 6 CFS. Some summer tests showed that if you reduce the flow to 3 CFS and the nearest farmer downstream needs to irrigate and turns on his well, you lose flow almost instantly and take several days to get it back. So we avoided summer releases. Our monitoring effort would be keyed to be able to prove to anyone who asked that there was surface flow through that reach, that there were no pools isolating fish and making them more available for predators or any other impact that could be held against us, so to speak. So that's the key section. That's why we're avoiding competing with any farmers alongside the stream, so we don't get in a situation of trying to predict what the other guy needs to do and when and all of that kind of stuff. So again, yeah, we would measure that section very carefully. We did note, just through visual observations. Last winter, looking at a period where there was no rain for at least 10 days, we were in the midst of that wet, rainy season, visual observations of 6 CFS at the dam, and as you move down at every road crossing, there's increased flow from inflows. 22nd Street was roughly 3 times that flow. And, of course, that would be higher when it's actually raining. So if we can keep flow in that critical reach and enough to have connectivity, then whatever the difference is in release should be available for additional storage.
Okay. Satisfied?
Yep.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Gary.
This is actually for both Mark and Dean. And, Mark, if you go to page 4 of the Hutchinson plan endorsed by Gehring, possibly to be modified. Objective 1 says, in effect, allows the project to continue to meet its contractual responsibilities. And I'm wondering if you can tell me if that means or includes that the intent is to store and provide as much surplus water as hydrologically feasible.
It's really a two-step. The first goal is two objectives, let's put it that way. And the first one would be to balance the reservoir, to generate 204.
It says contractual responsibilities. So I'm going to the contract.
Okay.
That's why I included Dean, because I thought maybe the contract itself, and I seem to recall the contract itself speaks to surplus water now. And if it does, if you satisfy contractual responsibilities, then we're covered for providing surplus water, if we can provide it.
Well, there's a provision to cover surplus water. I don't know that creating surplus water is a contractual responsibility, as providing water to municipalities is a contractual responsibility, as is the environmental releases. So I'm not sure that's the same. I would have to look at the language and see if there is a contractual responsibility to do that. I think there's an administrational procedure of how to deal with surplus water, but I don't know that that's a contractual responsibility.
No, I think you're right. I don't think there's a contractual responsibility to provide surplus water. I'm suggesting that maybe one of our goals ought to be to provide surplus water if it's hydrologically feasible.
I would agree with that.
Yes.
And I think I would add Chairman Rabinault's comments about the Aurora Grande and Grover Beach in the period between now and when the HCP is approved, generating as much surplus water as they would desire.
Right.
Would be a discussion under that goal. We're aware that those agencies are looking for alternative sources, right, and that takes time to find an impact.
300 acre feet to the municipality. So using that operational methodology at that time, we were able to supply quite a lot of surplus water, even during the drought of record. So I guess my thought is we should at least have a goal to provide as much surplus water as we can and still meet other obligations.
Yes, I certainly concur with that. So, okay, are there any other questions? Yes.
It appears to me that these monitoring stations are something that we've needed for a long time. And knowing what we know about the creek, and when it's raining, you get a lot of water going down the creek, and you're releasing a lot. And it seems to me that if we have a monitoring station system set up, we'll have a daily way to adjust the flows during the heavy rain period. And more than likely, in normal conditions, we'll be able to generate that 200 acre feet and probably more without any problem. So I think it's an idea that needs to move forward.
I do as well. And speaking of that, I would certainly entertain a motion if there are no further comments or questions.
I guess maybe you're answering my question, but I guess my question was what action staff is looking to the committee at tonight's meeting. let me add that Mr. Reynolds' comments, I totally agree with that. This is going to be my second question. Why couldn't we consider, if nothing else, couldn't we consider moving forward with that? Seems like that's an obvious first step. But perhaps you can let us know what your thinking is in terms of our actions tonight.
It's fairly straightforward. What I'm hearing and what we would ask for is your recommendation on whether or not to move forward with the plan as it's currently structured, and I'm hearing an intention to add a goal, a specific goal to, or modify that one, to generate as much surplus water as we can do and still meet other obligations. And I'm assuming that's maintaining an appropriate level of risk. I'm also hearing that moving ahead with the stream gauges, despite what may happen with endorsement requirements or whatever else, is a good move to do. And we're essentially asking your advisory committee to advise us to whether or not we should do what this plan says we should do.
In spite of the, I don't want to say the words mandate, but it's certainly an agreeable figure of 6 cubic feet per second that nobody's complaining about now.
There's no complaints.
Right. So, I mean, I think that it makes perfect sense, personally, to go ahead and implement a program like this. It's not going to deter us from working just as hard as we can on this HCP to get it approved. And again, the only reason that I can see in my mind that we even need an HCP is because of an incidental take situation or something where we are absolutely going to be that little fishy in the brook.
What we're doing and asking for their approval. As a person who deals with regulatory agencies all the time, I can see the value in being honest and telling them what we're doing. I don't see the value in asking to approve to do things they can't do.
That's so right. They cannot
approve it.
And history has told us that.
So I would imagine that I will be drafting for someone's signature, maybe my own, a letter to the National Fisheries saying, this is what we're going to do, and here's all the good part, you know, stream gauges and keeps, you know, the potential for running out of water very low. We don't have the controversy. We don't have those issues. We can focus on the scientific HCP and then perhaps not answering my phone for 2 or 3 days after that.
Correct.
If the agency said, well, you know, we spend time on the stream, and have you thought about putting the gauge here instead of there because, you know, that kind of suggestion, absolutely, we would consider. I'm sure they're going to ask if we would share the data with them, and given that it's public information, I suppose we would. So would we listen to those agencies? Certainly. I don't know. They're not in a position to recommend that we don't do it. The response that we're likely to get if we get a written response is a reminder that they have the ability to enforce the law and fine us if we take a fish and
right.
La, 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 la. There is an element of this, as far as the HCP goes, of creating, how shall I say, perhaps approval of the HCP is more of a carrot than it had been in the past for an agency that wants to see a more sophisticated release schedule implemented on the stream. And that particular agency we're having good progress with and good productive discussions about scientific elements of the HCP and developing a cooperative relationship and moving it forward.
All right. Well, what I'd like to do then is I'd like to entertain a motion that we implement this plan, that we in fact move forward with the purchases of the gauges, that we make it a goal to in fact try to create as much surplus water as possible, and was there another? What was the other element? There's something else I'm leaving
if you'd
out.
Care to comment on the committee's opinion on the level of risk that we might be incurring by operating this, and whether you feel like we actually do need to amend the contracts, or on the other end of the scale, as the TAC felt, we don't really need to do anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think we need to do anything, but I'm only one person up here, so.
I have a comment on that, Mr.
Yes,
Chairman.
Please.
I think the item has been before the TAC committee, I don't know how many times, maybe 5 or 6 times now.
This version of it at least twice, and then there were discussions.
Where we discussed the interim release plan, and along with that, the risk that goes with implementing such a plan. And I think at least the TAC committee from the agencies that are represented there all feel that it's an acceptable.
Your concurrence on that?
Yes.
Okay, I'll entertain the motion.
I'll so move, Mr. Chairman, that we go forward without amending the contract.
Second.
Well, we need a whole motion.
What do you say?
What you said.
Okay. That in addition to the proposed.
In addition that we do not amend the contracts and,
right.
Go with the level of risk that we have.
Okay. Does everybody have clarity on that motion?
Yep. Point of discussion?
Under discussion?
Yes. Mark, this I'm impressed with the thoroughness of your report and your plan. I appreciate the amount of effort that's gone into this and it's probably in your report, but I think actually we discussed it at one time, but maybe can you remind me of, in regards to the stream monitoring program, we included in here, I do see the estimated costs associated with that. What about environmental documents that might be necessary for that work to take place? Is that included, or where are we?
The types of instruments we're proposing have no components that are in the stream. So the existing gauges would be literally go to the gauge house and open the door and install a new something or other with an antenna sticking out the roof. The new gauges would be attached to existing bridges. They would have to get down in the stream and survey a cross-section. At most, a categorical exemption under CEQA would suffice.
So nothing.
Yeah, just to put that real short version of that the work that's proposed here would be either categorically exempt or not even subject to any kind of environmental documentation.
Right.
Right. So that's the reason why it's not a cost item that's included in here.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a motion and a second on the floor. I'd ask for all of those in support to signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Are there any opposed? Thank you. Very good report, Mr. Hutchinson. I actually enjoyed that very much. New business, declaration of surplus water, Dean.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. The contract between San Luis Obispo County Flood Control and Water Conservation District in Zone 3 and the water contractors dated September 19, 2000, calls for surplus water to be calculated at the end of each water year in accordance with an agreed-upon formula. The amount of water that can be dependably delivered from Lopez annually has been determined to be the 8,730 acre-feet we've just been discussing just recently. That safe yield amount consists of 4,530 acre-feet shared among the various water contractors as their entitlements and 4,200 acre-feet reserved to be released downstream for environmental and agricultural purposes. If the entire safe yield is not released from the lake in a given year, the balance becomes available for delivery as surplus water in the subsequent water year. Calculations that we have done indicate that there is 0 acre-feet of surplus water available for the previous water
year. Over Beach City Council chambers, this meeting is adjourned.